Welcome to episode 112 of the China Flexpat podcast. We have discussed different career paths. Some of them include technology, some include top management, some include entrepreneurship. Seldomly we have a guest who has done it all. Etienne came here in 1988, which is 34 years ago, and he's still here and he's still not retired. So you can learn a lot from him, and I'm really happy to get him on stage today. Welcome, Etienne.
I'd like to start in year 1988, which is the year where I did my first trip to China, and also my first experience with AI on silicon as an engineering student at that time. Now, professionally, I'm based in Shanghai since 1995, so it's a while now. I was sent here by a large multinational company in telecom, a telecom infrastructure called Alcatel, which now is merged into Nokia. And for about 10 years, I moved up the ladder in that organization in China and Asia Pacific, from business development at the start, and then all the way to the full general management responsibility. That means that I got the chance to enjoy product management, R&D, supply chain, all the things besides the business. So that was an exciting time where my team and I basically delivered the high-speed internet access to half of the homes in China. So quite interesting. Now, in 2005, so 10 years later, I would do my first big transition. So I transferred my GM position to a Chinese executive, and then the key decision was, do I stay in the group or do I stay in China? But both were not compatible. And I decided, obviously, to stay in China and start my own business. So within a few weeks, I went to managing about 600 people and quite a big P&L to managing my own pencil. So at that time, I created an industrial sourcing service company, assisting Western companies to find products, quality products, reliable suppliers for technology and technical products, automation and mechatronics and so on. And we built a customer base across Western Europe, Scandinavian countries, and US. Now, a second transition came later when the global financial crisis hit the EU around 2010. And at that time, it became very clear that the interest of China as a cheap resource country started to fade, and China business attractiveness shifted to mainly the market size and the interest of that growing size of the market. Gradually, most of the projects I worked on were focused on helping companies in technology to develop their business in China. And I did that through a boutique M&A advisory firm called Riverbanks and a China business accelerator called Sinolabs, Shanghai Innovation Labs, which we created together with a few investment funds and other service companies. Now, more recently, another transition has started. I mentioned that in 88, I had my first experience with AI. Well, I rediscovered that in 2016, like everyone, when AI became the champion at the game Go. So since then, besides the business in M&A advisory work, I started an initiative to bring AI to companies outside the IT industry, and it's called DIY AI. I work with selected IT service companies and data science practitioners to help businesses and also research centers introduce the tools of machine learning and deep learning to solve their problem. And I also teach deep learning as an independent lecturer.
When I started this podcast, I was reaching out in 2020. I was reaching out to well-known international headhunters, and they declined an interview with me because they said there's no market for flexpats in the future. I don't want to encourage Europeans to come to China.
It is harder these days because there's so much unknown. We don't know in which direction things will go. Locally, it's not clear what's going to happen next year. No one knows. Those who know don't talk, and those who talk don't know. Internationally, the narratives about China is the worst ever, maybe since 1989. And then you have this global globalization that is more becoming like more regionalization, all the things, at least in the narratives. So it's much harder. When I came, and for many years, China was some kind of no-brainer. A lot of companies said, well, we have to be there. We have to be there. And when companies come here, well, they bring people with them, or they locally recruit people. On the other hand, you have less people than you used to have, and the needs are still there. At the same time as it's harder, there may be opportunities for those who are willing to stay here and are comfortable doing that in a very conscious way. And they know what they're doing. They know what they're ready to take. and what they're not ready to take and how much work and flexibility they can have. There are opportunities, but I would not advocate for people to come here. So if you want to come here, that's how to do it. And be aware of this. But I don't think anyone can advocate anything about China these days because the narrative is so bad.
What options do flexpats have to work in China based on your experience?
I would say it's getting a little harder for Westerners to bring value in a company, but there are ways to do that. Because obviously, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, there are more and more Chinese professionals that are, show high level of competence and experience, and a lot of them, tend to work very hard. But there are a few areas where Westerners have what I would call an unfair advantage in the eyes of international employers. For instance, anything related to control, so financial controllers, these kind of positions, or special technical expertise. Also, positions where people need to coordinate across organizations or departments or cultures also sometimes often have, in the eyes of the foreign organization, international organization, may have some what I call unfair advantage, not fully unfair. But if we talk about domestic sales or after-sales services, logistics, there typically the positions would be in experience or high-level senior positions, but I would expect there was a less entry-level position for flexpats compared to what I mentioned before. And that's in the eyes of, I would say, MNC or the international side of a joint venture.
So would you say there is a difference between working for a multinational organization compared to a joint venture?
Yes, joint ventures can be different types of animals depending on the situation. And the key element there is who has effective control of the day-to-day operations. So if I give you an example, we could have a joint venture with a balance structure. That means the Chinese partner and the international partners have similar shares in the company. That means that typically they would have long discussion and they have agreed on what kind of position is appointed by whom at the management level or executive level. And then you would have like a chairman and the sales head, the HR head by the Chinese partner, and maybe finance and R&D by international partner, like this as an example. Now, if you work in a department that is controlled by someone appointed by the foreign partner, then you would have those that would be similar to an NMC. If the company is more controlled or the departments are more controlled by the Chinese partner, they would be closer to a state-owned enterprise. And you also have joint ventures that are not balanced. One of the party has effective control of the day-to-day operations, either because the international partners let the local people manage it, or because they have the local partner has stronger shares in it. And then it would say would act either as a state-owned enterprise, if the partner is a state-owned enterprise, or like a private Chinese company. So I think it's really important to figure out what style of joint venture that is when people are considering working for them, to understand whether they fit or their taste or their experience match what is expected there.
So I expect that most flexpats working in joint ventures rather work for the foreign side, right?
I would say you may be recruited by a joint venture that is controlled by the local partner, the Chinese party, if you have position like managing international business of that enterprise, for instance, or in the R&D side because you have some specific skills. In many cases, flexpat would be recruited indeed by the foreign party or the international party as a way of having an eye within the company and figure out what's going on. And that's what I call the unfair advantage.
So that's the spy?
Well, you call it the way you want. It's not really a spy. You call it like an eye or a window in the company. It doesn't have to be spying. They're not supposed to do secret things, right?
What would be the official job description of a flexpat in this role? To be the eye of the international investor in this kind of joint venture?
Well, I would say the job description will not mention that because that's not a proper job description. You will have a function. You will have a function as a financial controller in one division or the head of CFO if it's a senior position. You would have a job as a project manager in the R&D team. or you would have a very pointy, very niche job in a technical support. So that's what will be in your job description. But clearly, the reason why you are, one of the reasons why you recruited there instead of someone with same qualifications or almost the same qualification who would be a national, is that the person recruiting has this feeling that, okay, the chemistry will be there. I can ask a question. I will get a straighter answer. That's not said, of course. It's a feeling you would have.
I work for a Chinese family-owned company. It's not a state-owned enterprise, but it has a lot of comparison. So if you compare this with this role, somebody opening up international markets, helping the Chinese company, give them a white face and, you know, help them to be more international. What would be the expectation there compared to the international guy in the international investment in a joint venture?
Being in that private Chinese company or being in an SOE, the Chinese side or the recruiting side will have a very specific reason why they recruit you, either a specific skill, as I mentioned, technical skills or financial management skills or some network. You may have a network. Or expected to have a network and easier access to international people or international companies in China, or some kind of expertise at the commercial side, the ability to connect with people. So that's what is valued in you to be recruited, as opposed to someone who is from the same environment that would be considered, okay, maybe if I send someone pure Chinesely educated person, it will be harder to connect with the purchasing manager who is a German or the GM of that company who is Spanish. These are the kind of layers that you have. The job description will not describe that, of course, but the understood thing is that you have that skill. And that's why it's important to understand that and to keep that hot, to keep that credibility. Otherwise, you have no use any longer. It's, oh, but I can replace it with that person with whom I can relate more easily. We are in the same party meetings, and therefore I can get him to do things that maybe you would not want to do.
So you're either going to be the white spy or you're going to be the white monkey.
Well, you can see it like that. Then I would say then you know, try your transition to go to another country because you will get frustrated. Or you can see it, you are the middle person who understands both sides and understands how to make those two things work. A key element in the business is that business and culture and the whole history of where we come from and this place are relatively different. And therefore, a lot of time people talk next to each other. You say something, the person thinks something else. I hear something and they actually thinking something else than what I hear. The skill of a lot of people who've been in China for a long time is to understand both sides and then to hardly to find a way to make it, the other side understand at least part of what the you know the local side is understanding this, but this and try to open the windows. Okay, no, the reason they ask that is this. And I know it doesn't make sense to you, but it makes sense to them. If you do this and this, then everyone will be happy. So you're the middle person there. That's the best value people can bring in the long term between Chinese organization and international organization. And I'm here like for about 30 years. The level of misunderstanding remains relatively the same. We can talk better. We think we understand, but we're still a lot of disconnect. And that's really important to identify that, accept it, because that's a fact, and then see where can we bring this a little closer on practical issues, solve problems together, and move ahead.
That all sounds really romantic, but let's be clear. How do you make both parties happy?
But you're right. Making both employees happy is really, really hard. And because it requires to get some understanding of why the other is doing, each part is doing something. It also requires to have the respect of both parties. If you don't have the respect of one of the parties, that's hopeless. So it's really important to get that feeling. When I was working in the big company, at a certain moment, I sent an email to the European people announcing some kind of organizational change in the local organization, a small thing. And one of the managers sent an email saying, oh, that looks totally stupid. Why are they doing that? And immediately his boss told him, look, I don't understand either, but if they do that, there must be a reason. We'll discuss it later. That means even though what was done was purely Chinese-centric, the other side somehow say, okay, there must be a good reason. I don't understand, but I trust, I respect that decision to a point. And then they will explain later, but I don't have this preconceived idea that is wrong to start with. So that's really important to build on both sides. And if you have that, then it's no longer romantic. It's practical. I have an issue. I propose to solve it that way. You don't understand it. Okay, let's make one step. I make one step. You make one step. Let's do something. And as long as, and by building and solving practical problems, small things sometimes, you build that respect, and then you can get things done on both sides. But at a certain moment, it will not work any longer. And then you have to pick a side. You have to pick a side. And then live with the consequence of that.
If you have this kind of role in China for such a long time, you understand both sides, you can bridge, you can create huge value. How do you stay connected to your home culture when you've been abroad for such a long time?
Yeah, that's actually a full-time job, I would say. That's really important to realize that this is your own job. You need, as part of the value you have as an international flexpat, is to bring that knowledge from outside. And also to keep your network and friends or acquaintance or just professional network outside. So whether you are in an organization that has that or whether you are independent, you need to spend time contacting, keeping the contact with people, talking with them, but also bringing value. Be open to stupid questions, naive questions about what's going on, and then calmly explain what's the situation and spend some time on that, dedicate some time on that. Because then you keep, you have value for people outside of China also, not only the Chinese employer or the people that are directly working with you. The second thing also is when we're here at Flexpat, we need to be friends of China, but we cannot try to become Chinese because we'll never be. And that means that you keep your own values to an own taste and style. And that helps also to stay connected with the people outside of China. And then if you put the work and you visit when you can, of course, it's much harder than the last 3 years, but hopefully we'll be able to travel again more easily soon, especially for the European continent. So many people misunderstand what's going on and don't understand at all what's going on that continent. So being able to explain what's going on with that, you know, in that situation, with the election and the political situation there, and the economic situation here, and this strike there. So being able to explain that in a way that makes sense for your local employers or the party, the partner, is really valuable. And actually, it is one of the reasons why they want to stay playing with you and working with you, because they see that value on things they don't understand. Whether it's companies, government, big organizations, it really has value. So it's really important to put a lot of work on that.
What is the value that a flexpat brings in compared to a Chinese professional in the same role?
So the minimum element is to be at least as professional as the Chinese professional next door. That's the minimum, right? You need to be as good at what you're doing. But then as a flexpat, you bring a understanding of diversity of the world that is probably, especially as European, that is wider than, because we are exposed to different languages, a lot of different cultures, quite different, and a lot of different business organization culture. The companies here, especially when they try to go international, or when they deal with foreign organizations, sometimes are puzzled by what's going on. A lot of them consider the West as one entity. And typically the one entity is the US. And then we confuse, why is that going on with this German or with the Spanish companies? I don't understand. So that's something that we need to put effort to understand well and be able to explain or rationalize in the eyes of the majority of the people in China, whether they are in a company, a government, or employees. And that's a key value, and that's a strategic advantage we have that is much very hard to build, and we are lucky enough to have grown up in those areas, and therefore we have it in us. We need to value that to the maximum.
How do you manage, in your experience, your age, how do you manage to keep up with this? To say, okay, I will bring the same value like the international Chinese professional speaking English, and I will have always this cutting edge.
Because I love it. I don't have any other answer. The day you stop loving it, then you have to start your next transition to do something else. Different people have different pace. You take the pace you want and you can. But remember, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Anything you do here will take forever. So you need to keep that pace and that energy level for the long time. As long as you do that, everything will be fine.
I'm so happy to hear the way that you say this, because the reason we build this podcast is to help those who want to come to China and to give them a real clear source of information where they can dig into and learn from people like you how to do that. There is one always difficult problem I want to discuss today, which is salary. So how do you compete on your international salary, cost of lifestyle, with Chinese young professionals?
Professional people are quite expensive in China. It's surprising what salary needs to be paid for some jobs. And some other jobs are so cheap. So there's a big disconnect depending on what the job, what the position is. I'm not sure, some people in Europe get very low salaries also for some position. The only issue, you need to secure your healthcare and housing. If that's secured, okay, then you can do a lot of different ways in China where the cost of living goes up, but still quite reasonable. And the salary you can secure in China are not necessarily worse than what you have in Europe. But of course, it's not an expat package, right? That's clear. That's why we are flexpat. That's part of our attractiveness to companies, is that they don't have to pay for the children and the housing only.
So what is your advice to the flexpats, how to stay in China as long as you?
It's really to understand what, as an individual, we bring to, not what we think we bring, but what we receive as a feedback from the people we work with that we bring, what they like, what they enjoy, what the question they ask us, and nurture that, develop it, keep that working. If you work in an environment that is puzzled by what's going on in Europe, okay, then spend time reading, talking with people about what's going on there. If it's something about particular skills at bringing teams together, okay, let's nurture that and bring that in. The second thing is the environment change. The needs change, the capabilities and the skills of what's going on change. The geopolitical environment changes quite drastically. So things change. That means that it's important to be aware of that and plan things, because change don't happen in one day, especially when it's personal. Look around, is what I'm doing still the right thing, or will that still be the right thing 5 years later? If not, then slowly start spending a few hours per day or per week working on that transition. And of course, in something, in a direction that you like and you enjoy. You need to be comfortable with what's going on in the country. The country doesn't care what we think. It's big enough, can do whatever it wants. Or it will do whatever it wants or can. For instance, if I take the case of the lockdown we had a few months ago, that was a surprise to a lot of people. How can that happen? Not the fact that we're locked down, but the harshness which happened at that time in some situation that a lot of people were shocked. That has happened. I don't make a judgment on what it is, how bad or good it is. It happened. And it may happen again. Maybe not a lockdown, but another situation where harsh decisions are made and we suffer from that. If in the long term it generates anger or frustration, well, that's a signal that it's important to look at next steps somewhere else. It's like the rain. We don't like when it's raining, but we cannot do anything about it. So how do we position ourselves with respect to that? And I think it's really important. It doesn't mean we agree with it, doesn't mean we support it, but it will happen. We cannot fight it. And therefore, it's important to think what we will do if that happens, how can I avoid it, or how am I ready for this, so that we're not surprised and we don't come in very difficult personal situations. But the skills, what is good, what we, how to nurture that, validate that and objectively looking at, okay, is that still valid? Will that still work 5 years later? Or have your five-year plan? and that, am I still aligned with what's going on in the place?
Etienne, is there something else which you would like to share which you think is relevant for flexpats?
Yes, the first point is what I mentioned before, the marathon. So what you do in China is always a marathon, not a sprint. And you need to be able to keep that pace. Second point is a continuous evaluation of your own position. What do I bring as a value? And when things move or becomes weaker, what's my plan to reinforce or pivot it to another direction? A third point is important for the next step. Is returning home is hard. It takes 2 to 3 years to prepare. So that means it's important to think of it. At the moment you start feeling that maybe you need an exit door, well, start preparing on that. You will not just go back home and be very comfortable. My method so far, I've always had a 5-year moving horizon. So every year I think, okay, am I happy for the 5 coming years? and has been working for 30 years, every year I think a little and say, okay, fine, I'm okay. Or no, I need to prepare something for next step. Or I need to start thinking of an exit strategy, quote unquote, to go by. That's something that makes you at ease, you're ready, and you feel comfortable facing anything coming up to you and accept it.
What do you see for the next 10 years for yourself?
Experience is based on the business in China and so on. That's going to get harder because, you know, of the narratives, less companies, less people come to the country. And that's why already a few years ago, I started moving into this AI related, so machine learning, deep learning, which is another passion of mine. And I've been thinking, how can I make that as a business? Because you need to live. So you like it, and I spent a lot of time on that and developing that. And so basically, part of an increasing part of what I would do here is helping organizations, whether they're Chinese or international, bringing these amazing tools into their portfolio to solve problems they have. That has the advantage that it's portable. Should something happen and should I decide to take my exit, then I can use that outside of China also.
That's really impressive. Thank you so much, Etienne. It was a wonderful exchange from the start of a career through different career paths. We've had guests who work in joint ventures representing the international side, and we've had entrepreneurs, we've had corporate expats in just purely international companies. And I work for a family-owned Chinese company, so I'm paid by the Chinese side. So that's very interesting. What I really enjoy from your side is that you say if you enjoy the experience, then it's going to be an interesting life. If you want to help us, if you want to support us, the China Flexpert community, there's so much you can do. You can give us good ratings on any platform, especially iPhone podcast. You can recommend new speakers to us. You can be a speaker yourself. You can take a screenshot of this episode, send it to your friend and tell him or her what he or she can learn from Etienne. This is how we want to grow this community. Thank you, Etienne. It was wonderful having you on the China Flexpert podcast. 谢谢, and 再见.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.